Macintosh Folklore Radio, written by Andy Hertzfeld and Company, and read by Derek Warren. Swedish Campground, August 1983. The Macintosh team thought it was important to enable the user to invoke every menu command directly from the keyboard. A special key for invoking menu commands was added to the keyboard, just like the Lisa, our predecessor. We called it the Apple key, and when pressed in combination with another key, it selected the corresponding menu command. A small Apple logo was placed to the right of every menu item with a keyboard command to associate the key with the command. Late in the afternoon one day, Steve Jobs burst into the software fishbowl area in Bandley 3, upset about something. This was not unusual. I think he had just seen MacDraw for the first time, which had longer menus than our other applications. "There are too many apples on the screen. It's ridiculous. We're taking the Apple logo in vain. We've got to stop doing that." After we told him that we had to display the command key symbol with each item that had a keyboard shortcut, he told us that we had better find a symbol other than the Apple logo. Because this affected both the manuals and the keyboard hardware, we only had a few days to come up with something else. It's difficult to come up with a small icon that means command, and we didn't think of anything right away. Our bitmap artist, Susan Kerr, had a comprehensive international symbol dictionary, and she leafed through it, looking for an appropriate symbol that was distinctive, attractive, and had at least something to do with the concept of a menu command. Finally, she came across a floral symbol that was used in Sweden to indicate an interesting feature or attraction at a campground. She rendered a 16 by 16 pixel bitmap of the little symbol and showed it to the rest of the team. Everybody liked it. 20 years later, even in Mac OS X, the Macintosh still has a little bit of a Swedish campground in it. The Mythical Man Year, October 1983. One of our first encounters with the press was a group interview with Byte Magazine, one of the first personal computer hobbyist magazines written for a fairly technical audience. We wanted an article to be published concurrently with the release of the Mac. Byte Magazine had a 3-month lead time for stories, so we spoke to them first. 5 or 6 people from the Mac team, including Steve Jobs, were extensively quizzed by 2 Byte editors. We talked about the Mac's graphical user interface software and how long it took to develop. QuickDraw, the amazing graphics package written entirely by Bill Atkinson, was at the heart of both the Lisa and Macintosh. "How many man-years did it take to write QuickDraw?" the Byte magazine reporter asked Steve. Steve turned to look at Bill. "Bill, how long did you spend writing QuickDraw?" "Well, I worked on it, on and off, for 4 years," Bill replied. Steve paused for a beat and then turned back to the Byte reporter. 24 man-years. We invested 24 man-years in QuickDraw." Obviously, Steve figured that 1 Atkinson year equaled 6 man-years, which may have been a modest estimate. The Puzzle, September 1983. While the original Macintosh could only run 1 full-sized application at a time, it could also run little programs called desk accessories that shared memory with the main application. Like the system software itself, most desk accessories were written in 68,000 assembly language. I decided to write a desk accessory in Pascal as a proof of concept. Desk accessories were usually small utilities, like the calculator and the alarm clock, but I thought that we should include a game or two to show that the Macintosh was fun. I decided to write a 15-number puzzle where 15-numbered tiles are laid out on a 4x4 grid where they must be arranged in sequential order. Clicking on a tile next to the empty space would slide the adjacent tile into that space. It was a fun way to waste time and build up your mouse coordination. Because the number puzzle was written in Pascal, it had to link with the Pascal runtime, which dragged in a lot of unnecessary code. The puzzle became more than 6 kilobytes in size, most of which was just the runtime. By the fall of 1983, it was time to make decisions about what to include in the final product. We had shown the Mac to a number of industry analysts, and while most were enthusiastic, some of them didn't really get the graphical user interface. They thought it was game-like and not suitable for serious computing. This caused some of the Macintosh marketing people to be a bit leery about the more whimsical aspects of the design. And so the puzzle, the only piece of bundled software that could be classified as a game, became somewhat controversial. Jerome Coonan, the software manager, came by my cubicle one morning to tell me that they decided not to ship the puzzle. The decision was based partly on people's game-like perception of the Macintosh, but mostly because it was just too big. Applications were very tight on RAM, and the puzzle, because of the Pascal runtime code, was one of the largest desk accessories. At over 6 kilobytes, it also ate into the available disk space. I liked the puzzle, and I didn't want to capitulate to the buttoned-down, all-business view of the customer. I told Jerome, "You know, the puzzle doesn't have to be so big. I bet I could rewrite it and get it to take up less than 1 kilobyte. Would you keep it if I got it that small, or is it really the other issue?" Jerome thought about it and told me if I could get it down to 600 bytes or so, it would be included in the final software release. The only problem was that I had to get it done over the weekend because we had to send the manuals out for printing soon, and there was still a lot of other things that needed finishing. Of course, I couldn't resist the challenge. It took only a few hours on Saturday to recode the puzzle in assembly language without the bulky Pascal code, paring it down to the required 600 bytes. I proudly showed it off to everyone the following Monday. The puzzle did make it into the first release and continued to be a part of the Macintosh system software for many years. Steve Wozniak University, September 1983. The launch of the Macintosh was scheduled for January 24, 1984, so preparations began in the fall of 1983. Steve decided to anoint some of the engineers, plus a few others, as the official Macintosh design team, and we had to be prepared to be interviewed by the press. Some magazines had lead times of more than 3 months, so interviews were scheduled as early as October. As part of the preparation, the Regis McKenna press liaisons, known as the Regets, asked each of us to fill out a questionnaire that included the standard questions, like date and place of birth, degree, and so on. They were going to be used as the basis for a fact sheet that would be handed out to the press. Burl, who didn't have a college degree, didn't know how to answer the question labeled college attended. He thought about it for a moment and then came up with the perfect answer: Steve Wozniak University. In some fashion, we were all graduates of Steve Wozniak University.